Foodie Films is brought to you by the Cage Club Podcast Network. For all things Cage Club related, head on over to cageclub.me. That's cageclub.me. Foodie fans, welcome back to another episode, episode 5. 5 is actually my lucky number, so lucky number, lucky episode. And in this episode, my guest is Michael Manzi. Name should be familiar because, I mean, we've said it on this one, and he's the co-creator of the network that this podcast is on, the Cage Club Podcast Network. Manzi and I go back a long ways. Me, him, Joey, a bunch of other people on the network, we all went to Ramapo College together, but he's really the only person on the network that went to Ramapo that I knew, and I hung out with, and we've worked on a bunch of projects together. He's the person I contacted when Brian and I were first scheming up P.S. I Love Hoffman, our previous podcast, and, I mean, and he, you know, in welcoming arms, embraced Foodie Films. So just a few things before we start the conversation. I noticed when listening, because I listened to the episodes before we release them, maybe do a little tweaking, I started giving some trivia, you know, that I love my IMDb trivia, and I started talking about this character, Charlie. He's the guy, he's in charge of the building where, you know, where the women are furniture. The movie Soylent Green that we'll be talking about. It's very crazy, dystopian future. And Charlie is played by Leonard Stone. And Leonard Stone, I was bringing up this this trivia because he's going to be in another film we'll be covering, which is Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory, and he plays Mr. Beauregard. That's, you know, Violet Beauregard's, you know, father. You know, Violet, you're turning Violet, Violet. Same guy. So we'll be seeing him again in Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory. Anything else? Oh, yes, I just want to say one of the best meals I've had in a while was at Semitas Puebla y Taqueria, which is in Union City, and you know, I live in Jersey City. It was like a 10-minute drive, and my roommate Tommy had actually been there before, and he always brings me he just rides his bike around, finds these great spots. I got to have him on an episode. He's just, he knows good food, and he's good at seeking it out. But this place, Semitas Puebla y Taqueria, they had a good special. You know, it's like 4 tacos for $12. And these tacos, boy, were they just fantastic. And I know, like, how great can tacos, how do you screw up a taco? You know, there's a couple, it was just that everything was so fresh. And when I say fresh, we were sitting next to this glass, you know, border window thing where you could just see all the meats like stewing around in just, you know, low and slow. And I saw the chorizo and, you know, the carne asada and just the, you know, the chicken and just all the great meats that are put into the tacos are just stewing around together with the onions and just even the presentation on the plate, put some radishes and the onions that were in the stew. Really nice. And they also use 2, you know, soft tortillas instead of just 1 for the tacos, which was really nice because they were, you know, they were hefty tacos, and sometimes you'll get the juices that'll seep through and the taco will fall apart, and these were just great tacos. So 4 for 12, yeah, so $3 a taco, great Cemitas, Puebla, Itaqueria. Get there. Don't too many of you go there because I want to be able to walk in and get my tacos. But check it out. Listen to this episode and go right after. It's that good. I said that it was a meal that I was sad to finish because it meant it was over and I couldn't continue eating. It was that good. Anything else before we start? No, I just, you know what? Enjoy this conversation between one of my older film buddies, my go-to sci-fi guy, Michael Manzi.
Okay.
We didn't have lunch. I didn't know what to do. We usually meet.
Oh, that's
have
right.
Lunch.
We should have, since it would have. It's food themed.
It's appropriate. You are. Correct me if I'm wrong. Like Mr. BLT or Turkey Club
or what's the one I just had it yesterday? I went to the diner and brought it home. Taylor ham and cheese.
Oh, yeah.
Taylor ham, egg and cheese on a roll with some
fries.
Something like that. I'm very easy to please, though. I know.
Well, that's like the perfect diner food, right?
Yeah. As far as I'm
we're
concerned, I've been
Jersey.
Eating it for like 20 years.
Yeah, we're from New Jersey. We're in New Jersey. We're in North Jersey.
Yeah,
the
diner capital of the world.
Right?
I thought so.
What's your favorite diner?
Well, it's not much of a diner anymore, but it was Suburban, and then it burned to the ground, and it got
Suburban
rebuilt.
Burned to the ground?
Yeah, you don't
the
remember?
One in Paramus?
Uh-huh. I remember driving by one day, and it was just a charred remains.
Oh.
Yeah, and they rebuilt it. It's more of like a half a family restaurant.
Yeah.
Kind of, it's a little more upper sophisticated, but I didn't like it now.
I don't know if it was my favorite, but it was my diner. It was the Northvale Diner. That was like the diner of the Northern Valley. Like, you know, that was the diner where we went to in high school.
Cool, yeah.
And it was, you know, it's like, I think then the Tenafly Diner is owned by the same people. I think they might own one other as well. But there was... it was after high school, but they did this huge addition, and then I remember going in there, and they like changed the decor and everything, and I go in there, and right away we sit down, and then like they bring over water, but then they brought over a plate that had like carrots and celery.
See, no, that's not.
I'm like,
that's
no,
not a diner.
That's
yeah.
not. A, that's not diner.
No, I don't know what's up with that. The one you and I go to all the time is really good. Wherever that one is, down way down by Ramapo.
Oh, State Line.
State Line.
Yeah. That was like our college diner.
But the food there is amazing. Just over the past 25 years, the speed at which the food comes out has increased exponentially.
They're pros, and they make like quality, like food there.
Yeah.
And diner menus
delicious.
Are like the endless, the black hole of. It's like
this is the extent of my palate too. Like, you're not gonna get me on talking about like fancy restaurants or anything either. Like, it's all like junk food mostly.
As long as it's not Soylent Green.
Oh no, yeah. That would be
segue.
How is that a segue?
Just bringing up Soylent Green. Oh.
No, I know. I'm joking. Yeah, but what are we transitioning into?
No, we're not transitioning to that yet. But with me
yes.
here is Michael Manzi. Co-creator of the Mothership Cage Club Network, cageclub.me.
Yeah, and we're here at Headquarters North, I guess you call it.
I missed you at the... I don't know when the last time saw you was, but I missed you at the Cage Club. I mean, it's Joey's housewarming, but it was...
Right. The christening of the new studios.
Yes, yeah. But it was such a big party that it needed to be 2 days.
Yep.
You were at day one. It was a Saturday. I went on a Sunday because I was up in Vermont getting my craft beers and my I was actually at a yoga festival. I didn't participate. I was just appreciating the views.
With the beer goggles.
Yeah, but eating all the healthy. I like eating some vegan food every once in a while.
It's crazy though because Joey had a 2 day barbecue with all of his friends basically, and then his friends got to meet his other friends and stuff. It was very
I love parties like that.
It was very sort of fast and furious, you know, like when you think of the barbecues
Which
at the
is,
end of those movies
yeah.
and it was like an ultimate version of that was 2 days long. I actually ate I was there with Brian, your ex
co-host.
Your ex.
Yeah, my ex Brian Rodriguez. Yeah, of well now he's got his new podcast, High School Slumber Party. Check it out.
Yeah. So he was there when I was there, so I talked to him a lot that day, but I ended up eating like two hamburgers and like two hot dogs. I ate a lot. I uncharacteristically brought my appetite to that barbecue. But that was really cool. A lot of hosts at that.
What kind of side dishes did they have your day?
There was like a Oreo cookie cake or something. Ooh. I think that's what it was. Yeah. I had a piece. And just like all kinds of random cookies and chips and stuff. I don't remember anyone like holding anything over their head and saying, it has arrived, like it is, you know, or anything.
I brought as a little gesture, just, you know, you go to a party, I like to bring like a little something. But I'm like, everyone's going to bring like something like, you know, alcohol or something like that, or a homemade dish, which again, I was coming from Vermont, so I wasn't going to make anything up there and bring it down. But I brought some Vermont maple syrup.
Oh, yeah, so
that
was,
food is always on my mind, people. And appropriate. And I said to Joey, I said, I hope that this maple syrup is as sweet as the time that you have in this house.
That's hilarious. When you're eating your pancakes, you can think of me.
Pancakes, waffles, or French toast, go.
Oh,
fuck, marry, kill. which one's your favorite out of the three?
I'm not a huge waffle fan. I mean, I think they get a little too crispy if you make them wrong. I love the pancakes, so I'll probably go with the pancakes.
Yeah, French toast.
The French toast, you know,
it's like a fancy day.
You know, I eat a lot of that too, but I guess I'm more partial to the pancakes. Yeah,
flapjacks,
exactly. Stack them high. Whatever happened? Wait, so what's up with IHOP now? Their IHOP. What is that? Like, come on.
So it's International House
of Burgers. Burgers.
Burgers.
Yeah.
There's not. You know what? I think they realize that there's not enough burger joints out there.
Really, if there's one thing America's lacking, it's, you know, the home for a classic burger. When I used to go to, we used to go to IHOP all the time in high school, and I would always get the biscuits and gravy.
Ooh.
That was fucking amazing.
I've only been to like IHOP, I think, twice.
Really?
Yeah.
Whoa. Kind of the, I mean, I could get that.
I don't know. It's just, you know, again, we grew up in diner culture.
But it's kind of like biting the diner look. If you go in there, it feels like a diner, but it's like its own brand. It's strange. It's like they adopted that.
Yeah.
Well, there.
I'm not about
setting.
Crazy toppings like, either.
You don't like the Rudy Tooty Fresh and Fruity?
No, that's
breakfast.
That's too much. I see those things all the time. Like, I remember I went down, I visited a friend in like Central Jersey, a place that doesn't exist really.
Anyway. Yes, it does.
Different. That's for my New Jersey podcast. But yeah, I went to one of those. You ever see like in Facebook and like the news feed? It was like one of those crazy bagel places.
Okay.
It's so many different thing, and then different spreads. Okay. And again, like that's, I'll have it once. I think I had the Elvis.
Oh, he's got his own bagel?
Yeah, so it was, you know, the peanut butter, the bacon, and bananas.
Yeah.
That's his, you know.
Oh, right, that was his sandwich.
Yeah, that was his sandwich. I have a pot holder that has, like, how to make it or whatever.
Elvis, like, was the man. He was, like, all about the munchies and, like, cooking up, like, weird, crazy shit in the middle of the night.
I have a friend gave me an Elvis cookbook once. It's called Are You Hungry Tonight?
Oh, it's perfect.
Are you hungry tonight?
Come here, Colonel. We gotta go to the supermarket.
I wonder if there's a food-centric Elvis movie. He's got a lot of movies.
He's got a lot. He's got like.
So I wonder if he played a cook in any of them, or if it took place. I mean, I'm gonna have to see. I'm surprised. I just saw Marty for the first time. You know, Ernest Borgnine.
Oh yeah, I've never seen it.
Great movie.
Yeah.
And he plays a butcher. He won best.
He won best actor. Yeah, that was like his big.
That was
calling.
His yeah.
Yeah.
Then, I mean, he's best known for, like, McHale's Navy, the TV show.
He was on the show, McHale's Navy?
Yeah.
Oh, okay, cool.
Or he's in the movie, but...
Okay, because I wasn't sure what he... I knew him mostly as sort of a more, like, elderly comedic actor when he got older and stuff. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I wasn't sure what he was
And he rocks the hell out of Hawaiian shirts, which I'm wearing a Hawaiian shirt right now, so...
Oh, he wears one on the Simpsons episode.
Oh, really?
They go camping. That's why he's wearing it.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Where'd you get that pocket knife, Dad? I stole it from that Borgnine guy.
Simpsons podcast, dream podcast.
Homer loves food.
Homer does love food. Don't.
It's amazing.
But we're here with Michael Manzi, and we're covering Soylent Green, as I kind of teased before. Mm-hmm. 1973, dystopian.
Yeah.
Suspense.
Future noir.
Yeah, future noir. What's your... I mean, when I think mm-hmm. sci-fi, I think you.
Cool.
You're definitely like up there. Like we said, we're in the Cage Club North headquarters. I'm looking at a Planet of the Apes poster, a Pacific Rim, a Mad Max Fury Road, a moon. So you're
Yeah, I didn't realize like most of my stuff. Boba
Fett, Back Star to the Wars Future. Things. So you know.
Yeah.
You're definitely like Mr. Sci-Fi. You're not only, you know.
Not only, no. I'd say it's my favorite genre probably. Yeah. Yeah. And then like horror, western, maybe tied second, and then everything else.
Could you say what your favorite like dystopian future movie is, maybe? Do you have one? I know that's tough.
I don't know. I
people
mean,
ask me all the time, like, you know, what's your favorite? I'm like, I gotta give you a top five.
I mean, I'm sure I can't think of like a really obscure fucked up one that I've seen at some point that I just can't pull the reference for, but I have to say like this one might have been like the first time I was exposed to like a dystopian future, like the idea that the future could be
really this movie.
Yeah
Do you remember the first time you saw this movie?
Pretty much, yeah. I was of the bullet hole in the glass in that shot. So I saw this for the first time around the same time I first saw Planet of the Apes, which is still probably like my favorite movie of all time, the original one.
Yeah.
And I definitely saw this on like Turner Classic Movies one afternoon during the summer when I was like 13 or 12 or something, so I was like pretty young. And I knew Heston from Planet of the Apes, so I was like, okay, like I'll give this a try. And I, you know, it like scared the shit out of me. Like, it blew my mind. Like, I couldn't understand that, like, this was a possibility. And then ever since then, like, I'd just been, you know, thinking about overpopulation.
This is a very progressive, like, themed movie.
Global warming.
Right?
Yeah, exactly.
Like, one of the first computer games is in that, like, apartment scene.
Right. Space computer or something it's called. No, exactly. There's also a scene with a cordless phone in this movie. Yeah, there's a lot of really Prescient sort of ideas flying around, not just like the social commentary, but also like the technology.
And it's good to know in the future that we've got like minimal clothing options. It's like everyone's dressed as pretty much like, if you're a bad guy, you're dressed as like a ninja or what I call like a Dutch fisherman, and then everyone else looks like bakers. They just have...
Yeah, I mean, they've got a bit of like the District 9 look going on because everything is just what's left. Like, that is, like, they're just all living off the scraps, and not just the scraps regarding food, which we'll definitely get to, which is like a huge point of this movie, but
like all bland earth tones.
Yeah, right? But I mean, there's just not enough room for people to live, so there's just not enough of anything, basically.
He's
so
like
people have been
constantly
wearing these,
stepping over people, right?
Yeah, one of my favorite shots is there's a armed guard at the top of the stairwell in the apartment. Well, that's so nobody that lives there gets past that into the rooms, you know, like you can congregate and sleep in the halls and stuff, but you can't get into the room. So it's like he's like the doorman, basically.
Well, all doormen should have like, you know, M16s or whatever.
at least a 9 or something. So like this movie has been a favorite movie of mine for like a really long time. I don't know. I think it's like a classic at this point, definitely. Like, not just Heston, but Edward G. Robinson. This is his last movie.
Yeah.
It was probably still best known as Little Caesar, a movie that came out like almost 100 years ago.
Well, did you know that he was almost Dr. Seuss?
That's right. Yeah. It's that he couldn't handle like the makeup effects and stuff. It was just too grueling. And he only died like 10 days after filming
this.
Yeah. So like he was ailing, but he really wanted to do it because he believed in the message. And
yeah, supposedly Heston cried. Those were like real tears of his performance. But no one knew. He kept his, he had cancer and he kept that a secret.
Yeah.
But just like supposedly just that performance, but he used that and that performance like made Heston during his like suicide scene, which is like a very,
that is, so that reminds me of like Children of Men, you know, like the quietest and everything, like this was like what, 30 years before that, and it
close to 40,
almost 40.
Yeah, this movie is now, 45 years old.
Wow. Crazy. And it could have, you know, they won't make it tomorrow because half of our country doesn't even believe in this shit.
This is supposed to take place in 2022, New York City, 40 million people.
In just New York.
In just New York.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So imagine the rest of the population.
Planet.
Imagine
right now
China.
Is 10? And yeah. So we're 4 years away from this. I don't think it'll jump like 300% in
4 years. It's hopefully contained to like a city block, basically, because it almost feels like Judge Dredd in that way, where you have like Mega City 1.
Ooh.
You know, like it seems like that type of thing where there's just nothing, there's nowhere to farm, there's nothing out there, so there's nowhere to live. It's just like unlivable world out there.
Is this, did you know the line, so spoiler alert, but people.
Oh yeah, okay.
Soylent Green is people.
Major, major, like.
Yeah.
Soylent Green is made out of people.
They're making our food out of people. Next thing, they'll be breeding us like cattle for food. You gotta tell them. You gotta tell them.
Promise, Tiger. I promise. I'll tell the exchange.
You tell everybody. Listen to me, Hatcher. You gotta tell them. Silent Green is people. We've gotta stop them somehow.
So between that and Planet of the Apes, imagine watching those two movies the same summer and just getting your mind blown left and right.
Charlton Heston really is like there's always like Prince, Godfather, King, whatever, Duke. I don't know what you want to call him. But like, do you think of Planet of the Apes, Soylent Green, and then those disaster movies,
right?
Earthquake and Towering.
Well, I mean, even the 12 Commandments to a degree.
With biblical films too, yeah.
10 Commandments. 10? How many commandments?
The 15 commandments. Christ. 10. The 10 commandments.
I mean, even that's a disaster film to a degree. It's a big, epic Hollywood blockbuster show. And then he did Omega Man, which is a version of I Am Legend.
Yeah.
Like, it's weird how he is kind of known for that during the middle of his career. I'm not quite sure, but as much as I don't care for his politics.
He was 50 years old when this movie came
out. Okay, yeah. As much as I don't care for his politics and everything like that,
him and I'm totally blanking right now. Who is he really? Kirk Douglas were really good friends, and
okay,
Kirk Douglas was supposedly extremely left, and Charlton Heston extremely right. But then even Kirk Douglas, I read this like in the trivia, like said to Michael Moore, like, that was when he in Bowling for Columbine, when like he really went after Charlton Heston. He's like, you shouldn't do that. Like,
right. Yeah. Put a gun from my cold dead hands. And imagine that conversation between Heston and Douglas, and he's like, come on, Chuck. They both got like these weird grizzly voices and stuff. He's almost doing like a bit of Douglas in his performance. I always feel like Heston has like that clenched jaw. One thing that's weird about this movie that, I mean, I don't know how you could, I mean, I don't even think they considered it, but just the idea that there's not enough food, but Heston is like, you know, he looks like he eats 3 meals a day, and he's like a big, strong guy, and like, there's people, like bodyguards that are big and intimidating and stuff, like, that's a little strange, but I guess there's enough for people who can afford it is like a big part of this.
Yeah, I would think maybe the police department is...
Well, yeah.
I don't know, like, has to keep him...
That's how he gets, like, half his supplies, is he just steals...
He's a scavenger from... His captain even says to him, like, oh, what'd you take?
Right, and it's just sort of known that you do that, and you split what you find, and you just sort of share the wealth.
We have it on in the background right now, and I'm not gonna... Unfortunately, with this podcast, a lot of, like, clips you want to show, since it's food and you're enjoying it, it's not really, you know, speaking.
Yeah.
But this is, like, we're watching right now the famous... famous scene, but the most like of the food scene of this film.
Right, it's not like the end when he screams, you know, Soylent Green is people, like, I hear what you mean.
No,
like, that's the
Thorne
scene.
And Saul are eating, I guess Saul made up the beef and the lettuce and the...
Well, yeah, so he comes back from the main murder, like the main the inciting incident is a very high-profile...
Which is like the nicest murder of all time.
And it's Joseph Cotton, too. So, like, if you know him, you sort of have, like, affection for him as an actor.
Yeah.
And this was his last movie also.
Oh, wow.
So lots of great last performances in this. But yeah, so this big official, who was Simonson, he learned the secret of Soylent Green, and he's become a liability. So he's been murdered by, you know, Big Brother, basically, as it is.
I was a little confused. He found out the secret, or could he just not take it anymore?
He just couldn't take it anymore. Like, he was part of, like, the elite cabal who is, like, doing this whole conspiracy. And Chuck Heston's investigating the murder, and as he's gathering evidence and stuff, he steals all the food in the apartment. And they're, like, really wealthy, so they have, like, stuff he's never seen before, like apples and beef and celery and tomatoes. And, yeah, it's just, I don't know, there's just such, I always got such a strong impact from how food is represented in this film, because we come from a land of plenty, basically.
Excess.
Yeah. And, like, so that's where Saul came from, too. So, like, that's who I identify with in this movie when it comes to the food, and it just breaks my heart, you know, just that he is reminiscing about it. Like, Charlton Heston never experienced a tomato.
Yeah.
So he doesn't really know what he's missing.
Oh, I love Saul's reactions to
exactly.
And
so, like,
even
in
the
that
paper
scene,
and the pens and everything, the pencils.
Right. And he talks about how there just used to be enough to go around and everything is just gone now. It's heartbreaking. Like, I cry several times throughout watching this movie recently. I mean, obviously, when he goes home, that scene is just, like, so emotional. But, like, when he first holds the beef in his hands and he starts to cry, it's really strong. It's really emotional. Like,
we'll play that clip.
Hey, Saul.
What are you doing home? What time is it? Paper. New paper.
Have some pencils. Did you ever see a cake of soap that big? Courtesy of your next assignment. William R. Simonson, Chelsea Towers West.
Soylent Oceanographic Survey Report, 2015 to 2019. Two volumes. When, how'd you get all these?
Off his shelves. They were the only reference books he had. You like them?
Love them. Do you know how many books were published in this country once upon a time? When there was paper and power and presses that worked and... What the hell? Oh, my God. Simonson was a great man. L'chaim. Love apple. Isn't that beautiful?
Sal.
Beef. Oh, my God.
Have you ever had that visceral of a reaction to food in your life?
So... I think so. I think coming back from, like, a vacation or somewhere where I remember, like, coming back from Norway when I was a kid, because over there the American food is prepared very differently, and so there was just nothing familiar about the stuff I knew, and then the new stuff I didn't like much of it. Like,
How old were you?
I went when I was 7 and then 9.
Okay. That's so. Yeah. I wouldn't either. I travel much. I didn't really travel internationally as a kid, but, like, I travel much more now. Mm-hmm. And so I'm very much on the, I'll try everything once. You know? I do love a lot of food that I wouldn't have had as a kid.
Yeah.
So
it's tougher when, I guess, you're a kid anyway. Yeah.
Of course.
Yeah. And so there's just, I just remember coming home and having, like, American pizza and, like,
just you kissing
know,
it.
Yeah, like almost like, you know, when people were afraid to fly, come off the plane and kiss the ground. Yeah. I was like just savoring the pizza and like, oh, because at that time too, I was like kind of overweight as a child, and I loved Domino's. Like, ooh, there was no tomorrow. So like, yeah, getting that first Domino's pizza back from like coming home from Norway, like at the end of the summer, it was like bliss. Yeah. It was crazy. So every other place I went after that, I was like more of a grown up or like a teenager. So I remember I went to Japan when I was 15.
Oh, wow. That's,
yeah.
I didn't know that. That's awesome.
I never told you that?
I don't think so.
No, oh, man. I could have sworn, but I love Japanese food. Okay. Like, especially like from like when you're in Japan.
Yeah, like traditional, like, yeah. Not,
yeah, like I don't even know where to. I'm not a huge sushi guy. I like sushi, but I'm not like huge on sushi. So like, I don't know where to get like good Japanese food in our area.
Yeah.
But I mean, we ate like kings in Japan. It was like incredible. Like everything, anywhere you went, it was just like delicious.
Do you remember like a dish that you really liked?
I just remember the night we got there, we went to some like place to get chicken, like right across the street from my friend's house, and yeah, it was just, there's nothing special about this place at all, but yeah, it was just like so, it's just delicious. What else was there? Was like we went one night to like a really nice restaurant and had to like dress up and sit nice, and like everything there where they came out like all dressed up, and so it was sort of like a whole presentation was really, ooh, cool, that like added,
oh,
to,
yeah,
like,
the enjoyment. Japanese are very, I don't know, just very on top of, right, aren't they? They're quiet after a movie because that show, like, they don't clap, I think.
Oh,
I think that's
that. It's just like a sign of respect.
They're
probably
a sign of respect, yeah.
Yeah, so I mean, they're very kind of, I guess, like very just delicate, I guess, with the presentation of foods, yeah, and stuff like that, but
like great traditions. I think also if you finish, if your plate is like empty there, that's
oh, yeah, I had no problem with that,
yeah,
when I was over there.
No, but I think it's, like, offensive. It's, like, that they didn't feed you enough.
Oh,
like,
did they? Oh,
like,
no, then
them.
I might have offended,
offended
a
Japan.
Lot of people over there. Because every morning when
I
our
think
friend's
that,
mom
you know,
would,
yeah,
like, cook breakfast, yeah, I would just, like, eat the entire plate, so hopefully she didn't feel bad.
yeah. Foodie fans, correct me if I'm wrong. I hope I'm not mixing up cultures, but I think that was Japan.
I'm trying to think if there was anything crazy and wild out there that I'd try. I think that was like probably the one time I ate like bugs, like, you,
ooh,
know, prepared meal,
yeah,
and like crickets and stuff. There was stuff like that out there, and like squid, mm-hmm, and things. Like, I'm down with that. That's cool. That's like calamari and stuff. Like, that doesn't bother me. As long as it's not Mon calamari.
It's a trap!
Then we're good.
Yeah, I was reminded recently because on another episode I said that the most, like, the strangest thing I've ever eaten was bull's testicles.
Oh.
And in España.
That reminds me of Funny Farm with Chevy Chase. Did you ever see that? He eats lamb balls.
Ooh.
I mean, you got to put that on your list. That's
okay.
A crazy scene.
Funny Farm, yeah.
Yeah.
But I had a grilled scorpion in Thailand.
Oh, cool.
Like, on a stick. It was very crunchy. It really didn't taste like anything.
Yeah, that's the same with, like, the crickets and stuff. Like,
yeah.
I never... It's like, all right, like,
all right,
yeah.
I don't need
it,
this, but
it
did
looks
it, and, yeah.
It looks gross. It tastes like nothing, and then like I'm over it. Like.
So, do you think that knowing this is a move, you know, again, this the line "Soylent Green is people,"
mm-hmm,
that's on the same level as, you know, "I am your father."
Oh, I mean, yeah.
And does that
yeah.
does that? Do you think, I mean, it's better not to know it, but do you think that takes away from the movie if you know
it? No, I don't think it takes away from this movie. I think it takes away from Star Wars a bit. Like, I don't think you should watch them
yeah.
in order. You know, you should watch them in the order they were released. Like, and yes. that's what's kind of unique about Star Wars Empire. That's the only one with, like, a twist
yeah.
like that in it, really, that hits that hard. I mean, you could claim Jedi has a twist to a degree, yeah, but it's not, it doesn't have the same impact. I think what is interesting about this movie is, like Planet of the Apes, I feel like it's a more sort of sophisticated film underneath. Like, it's
mm-hmm.
not, you know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah.
you could really, like, you could know Soylent Green is people, but that has, like, kind of not everything to do about the movie. Like, the movie is more of like a hard-boiled noir sort of conspiracy thriller.
Yeah.
It's more like Chinatown in the future, you know, and it's more about his character and less about the actual mystery per se.
Yeah.
And that factors in, of course, but I don't think knowing it can takes away all of the enjoyment, because most of it is the journey that you're on with Heston's character as he's discovering, you know, what Soylent Green is. Because, I mean, first he's being exposed to, like, real food, and then he's figuring out that the fake food is people, and we're cannibalizing ourselves and stuff. And so, like, it, the impact of that for him, I think, weighs heavier. In conclusion, I don't think knowing the twist ruins it. It's a little different with Apes because it's much more visual.
Yes.
And it's the final shot of the movie. In this movie, he kind of, you can kind of put it together a few scenes before he says it out loud and goes to the factory. You can kind of put it together a little bit through Saul's storyline. Mm-hmm. But again, that's not the main focus of the movie, really. It's more just like, how are people surviving in this environment?
Well, I had you in mind for this movie when I was writing, you know, the list of just all different films to cover for this podcast, but then you posted just, you know,
right,
a few days ago, the opening scene, and just like, oh, great opening.
I think,
well, you're good at that. You post, like, every movie you watch, you put, like, you post on, like, Instagram, like, a little, like, a picture from it. Every movie you see, you post your stub, but then you also, like, it is a great, you know, it's not food-centric, but let's talk about that opening. It does a great job showing just, like, the population.
Yeah. Problem. Yeah, I think it sets the movie up perfectly. Like, it doesn't even have credits in it. It's just the opening sequence. Mm-hmm. And it's just a series of photographs under a piece of music that I don't know who the music is. It kind of sounds like Gershwin a little bit or something like that. But, like, the music gets more faster and more intense. And the photographs just are pictures from, like, you know, the 1800s until present day. And you can just see how industrialization is taking over, and there's more things and less room and more people and less food.
It's
and
the clutter.
Clutter, exactly. Like, it really gets across in the span of, like, 2 minutes, maybe. Like,
and it makes it
100 years of history.
So again, this is 1973 and supposed to be 2022. So not believable for us now, because we're just, you know, 4 years from now, it's not going to be that, but it is getting, you know,
yeah,
you do have plenty of problems. I'm not saying that. But in 1973, that was possible. Is it believable that we're going to become cannibals and turn it into Soylent Green? I don't know.
I mean, that's the thing, is, like, we don't even, like, the people of the world of the movie don't know that they're eating people. They think they're eating plankton. They think that it's like from the ocean.
A lot of believable, you know.
I think actually, like, a lot of this plays really well because they thought that they were making shit up that would never happen. Yeah. And, like, the more time goes by, the more likely that this will happen, that things of this nature are coming to pass. And I think already in parts of the world, like, it's worse than it is in Soylent Green, you know? I mean, they're not eating people, but, like, there's no room to live, there's not enough food, there's, you know, the 1%, you know, has it all. Like, and that is very much a big part of this movie, is, like, they want it and keep it, and they're just gonna starve everybody else.
There is one very unbelievable thing about this movie, though. During the, like, the market scene or whatever,
riot,
this one woman yells out, "They gave me a quarter of a kilo." We are never, as American, I can say we're never going to use the freaking metric system. Sir, we are a land of imperial system. We are not a metric system country. That is bullshit.
I wonder if maybe it was shot in London or the... No, I think this was shot in L.A., actually. Yeah. It's on, like, the lot. But, like, no, that's pretty funny.
Yeah.
I didn't consider
that. That is bullshit. Okay.
Well, that's...
As a red-blooded American, I can say we'll never use the metric
system. Funny if that's the one thing that they get wrong.
Yeah. You know, I'm hoping that's not the one. But, no, I heard that and then also brought it up in, like, IMDb trivia. I'm like, that's funny. That's pretty good. And I just love, you know, so again, it's a movie with a classic great line of, you know, Soylent Green. It's, you know, first he says it quietly and then he goes
because
shouting.
He's been shot.
Yeah.
He's got shot.
He got shot twice in this movie.
Like, he fights for his life in this movie. Yeah. Are you doing any other cannibal movies? That's a whole line that you could go down that whole avenue if you needed to, but
definitely. I mean, this because it's made into food. I'm not, you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Like, it's processed
so
into a certain
that's
thing.
That's an interesting question. Like, is there a line? Like, is it still, I mean,
a line that I cross?
Like, what? Because it's funny in the movie, like, you just see these bodies being wrapped in sheets. They go into, like, one side of a machine, and then out the other side of the machine, they come out as little green crackers.
Yeah. Well, this movie, I mean, back then there wasn't, like, PG-13, but this is PG versus R.
Right, so and limited effects and all
yeah,
that. Kind of thing.
Yeah, so definitely, yeah, limited effects. I don't know what the budget was, whatever, but it was at least...
Well, you just can't see them chop up a body and, like, you know,
yeah,
process it.
Yeah, but even just
it.
Seeing, like, a bunch of... I think, you know, that's a very disturbing image if you saw a bunch of bodies just, like, tumbling down
just
to this
the
thing.
The way they handle
we're talking,
dead bodies.
This
they...
is only... I mean, you know, I'm not trying to get heavy right now.
Dude, lay it on me, man. This is the 70s, Jack.
This is only 28 years after World War II, that, you know, just had one of the largest genocides in recent history.
Yeah,
and so just, that's incredibly... I think that would just be that much more visually disturbing. It's very eerie with the white sheets.
It is kind of like this weird. I don't want to call it a Holocaust because no one's being forced into this, you know, thing. But this society has a building you can go to, and you can kill yourself. Like, you can die peacefully. Yeah. You could put yourself out of your misery. The option is there. And there's a scene where, like, you know, the front of this place is just peaceful and serene, and it's almost like heaven.
Your favorite color.
Yeah, and you sit down and you die with dignity in front of a view screen watching, like, the majesty of the past Earth's beauty and nature and everything. And then, you know, they put you through a little door, and out the back, you go into a fucking garbage truck.
Yeah.
Like, loaded, like, by the hundreds, there's just bodies upon bodies, and he has to sneak into one of those and, like, ride in with the dead bodies and stuff. And then they get to the recycling plant, as it were, and you just see them dumping them, like, by the truckload, like, into this factory, and it is, like, super disturbing. Like, there's no other, like, they really want you to understand, like, these are people being treated like garbage, basically, and recycled into food.
I think that also, I mean, you know, this film does have a lot of, you know, pretty, like, deep themes to them, but I think that, you know, another one to add to it is the way we treat animals and just the, you know, just the factory slaughtering of animals.
Yeah, no, that's an interesting thing. I don't think there's a single other, like, living animal in the movie. Like, I don't think there's no, like, dogs or cats or birds.
No, they would be eaten in a second, I think.
They would be eaten. There's no rats. There's no sounds of birds in the movie or anything like that. There's no insects really crawling around. Like, you're right. All that stuff would just be eaten immediately.
I definitely had just, like, another food-related thing to the film. It was that when he goes in and he's just like, ice. That's, like, the one thing. I'm a huge ice person. Like, every drink has to have, like, a lot of ice in it. And that's also something in Europe. There's three things in, like, the restaurant food realm that I wish that I would change in Europe. One is the ketchup there just does not taste like our ketchup.
No, I agree.
But I also don't have a lot of food there that I need ketchup, so.
I could testify in Norway the ketchup
doesn't. Yeah, yeah, it's probably better for you, but it just doesn't taste like our ketchup. Number two, they don't put, like, ice in their drinks.
Okay.
I like a glass of water with ice. And then the other thing is that there's no, which is good. Again, these are all good things, like, for the environment or just, like, in excess, and you can ask for them and probably get it. But I'm a man that perspires a lot. And so when I'm over there or I'm at a bar, I like taking, like, a cocktail napkin, you know, like the stacks that we have here, and just wiping my brow. They just don't have extra napkins there. So as far as the...
Okay.
Yeah,
saving trees
that.
And everything.
Yeah, so they're better people than us in that retrospect. But Kyle likes, you know, his...
Kyle likes to waste. I do too. I mean, whatever.
Wasting is fun.
It leads to this. There's one tree left in the entire city, and it's in this movie. Do you remember that scene where, like, the guy running for re-election, Santini, like, brings his grandchildren to look at, like, the last tree? So, like, yeah, Europe's trying to keep that from happening.
Some fun things about this movie, or just, you know, I don't know, they could be fun. Just decide for yourselves. But
hey,
so,
yeah.
Soylent comes from the idea of soybeans and lentils.
Yeah.
Soylent. This director, he also... I mean,
oh, I love this director.
Yeah, Richard Fleischer.
Fleischer. Yeah,
20,000 Leagues Under the Sea, Tora, 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 Fantastic Voyage.
Yeah,
like some real like great even sci-fi classics and war classics, and just a great director of his time.
Didn't he do the one where they shrunk down and went into
Fantastic
the guy?
Voyage.
Yeah, okay, that's what.
Yeah.
Later on, he does like. He kind of like in his later years, he does like Mr. Majestic with Charles Bronson, and like he does like Red Sonja. Like he gets into like a really weird sort of like level with his. I mean, those are like fun sort of just like genre pictures and stuff. But it's funny from the guy who did this and like Tora Tora Tora, like these big grand films. Like he'll sort of end his career like on a smaller scale.
So then. Edward G. Robinson, we said it was his last film.
Yeah.
But it's just, it was always supposedly he was like the nicest guy ever, but always played very like intimidating characters.
Yeah.
And so as we said, Dr. Zaius was supposed to be another one, and then another character, but then the director got one of the greatest actors, nothing to take away from Edward G. Robinson, but arguably the greatest actor of all time to play this role, but he was up for Don Vito Corleone.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, I think it was better that they went with a younger actor playing old instead of an actor that was supposed to be, like, that character's age. I think Brando's definitely the right choice.
Yeah. And then, I wrote down, the main characters are Thorne and Roth.
Yeah.
Sherl, I guess. But there is the character...
Furniture.
There's the character of... Charlie, and he's like the guy that wears like the red velvet coat. I guess he's in charge of that building. He slaps, he slaps the women around.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Who are those women, by the way?
So they're all furniture. So this is a really disturbing aspect of the film that I didn't quite get when I was younger.
Yeah.
I just didn't know about these things when I was like 11 or 12. But like now, I mean, this is so crazy, like in the climate that we live in. But yeah, basically, like. A job for a pretty woman in this future is to live in a certain apartment forever, for as long as you can, as long as the man that lives there wants you around. And you are literally considered furniture, like a chair or a stool or whatever, a television. Like, you are just there for entertainment, and that's how you survive.
This
like,
film
that
covers
is
a
disturbing.
A lot.
And it does it without, like... I don't know. Like, I don't want to say it's subtle, but it does it in a way, like, it doesn't feel like it's cramming it in. It all feels relevant. Like,
well, that's,
it all
exactly. Feels, it doesn't have that date, because there's...
Well, I think that's part of it being a detective story. It's like, in that genre, because it's, like, sci-fi and detective, it's, like, genre in a genre. Within detective films, I think the audience is more willing to accept new information scene by scene, as opposed to just getting sort of one info dump and sticking with it for the whole movie. Like, he has to start learning more and more, and information needs to be doled out throughout the movie. So I think just by virtue of the nature of a detective story, they end up getting away with a lot, like with infusing the film with a lot of ideas, a lot of different plot points, a lot of different, you know, parts of the reality, you know, the idea that there's an assassin after him throughout the entire film. Really plays into things like the riot scene, you know, like getting lost in the riot mix.
Is it the... I know, obviously, then the assassin from the beginning then gets killed by, like, the dozer or whatever and shoots him in the leg. But is it him the whole time, or is it also the bodyguard?
Well, so...
There is a couple things in this movie that...
It's mostly... It's the bodyguard that hires that kid and then rehires him to kill Thorne, and then eventually ends up killing Thorne himself.
Yeah.
So, like, he is after him the whole movie. Before he wants to stop him from learning the truth.
Yeah. Does Thorne die?
We don't know.
I love a good freeze frame.
I don't know.
The 70s were a great moment for
freeze frame. It's such a great ending because, like, you're like, giving the... Like, first... like, you're just... It's like a double hit. Like, the whole idea of Soylent Green is people, like, it just... it, like, the impact of that takes a while to wrap your head around. So then you're just, like... don't even wonder like if he's alive or dead. But after seeing it a few times, I love the ambiguity of that. I love the idea of like, is he gonna die and then be turned into Soylent Green?
Exactly, yeah.
Or like, is he gonna survive and get to the hospital and then is someone gonna like smother him to death with a pillow because he can't move? You know, or is it all gonna get covered? Exactly. Is it just all gonna get covered up? But at that point, like, he's the only proof. So screaming it in a church doesn't really do much to spread the word, right? Like, there could be rumblings and rumors started afterwards, and eventually, maybe.
Soylent Green is like kind of a new product in this world.
It seems like there's other types of Soylent. There's Soylent Red
and Yellow.
Red and yellow
vegetables,
right? I think that they say that. And then Soylent Green was harnessed from the ocean's plankton, like the surviving life in the ocean. It's basically what they did was, from what I imagine, they had some kind of machine that's like a whale, and it went through and it like got all like the krill and the plankton and whatever and stuff. And then
that's what they're saying.
That they sold that to the public. That's and that's why it's green.
Tuesday is Soylent Green Day. So what's a better day, like Soylent Green Tuesday or Taco Tuesday? Which one would you prefer?
Oh, Taco Tuesday, because like that's just a Lego free for all. This is like a fucking you had to stand in line and like you're lucky if you don't die in line. But I always thought it was funny after I saw this movie. The first time I saw this movie after the band Green Day came out, and there's like all over this movie is like Soylent Green Day. And I was like, why hasn't Green Day ever used that on like one of their songs or their album or something? Like that would have been perfect for it. And then I wondered if that's where they got the name from, and then I don't know either.
Yeah, right. Okay, this is the marketplace scene and the riot, and they're wearing good to know football helmets also have, you know,
riot gear.
Yeah.
And they're not playing any football games in this reality anymore.
You know what's also disturbing about the ending? I mean, or another thing that's disturbing about the ending and like the credits is that after that freeze frame then it goes to the colorful field again. And so then it even becomes, you know, that's what you relate to suicide. But just this whole film, like all the outdoor scenes have just like a dirt haze to it. And then it just becomes this like crystal clear, colorful flower scene.
So two interesting things. So first of all, they shot with like a certain filter. They created it themselves. So it's like a one of a kind filter just for this movie. So that overlay isn't like a digital effect. It's actual filter they created to shoot this movie to make it look worse intentionally. So you mentioning that at the end of the movie, Thorne yells Soylent Green his people. He puts his arm up in the air and you see like the blood raining down his arm and it freeze frames and then it cuts to the images
from home.
The
vertical flowers.
So maybe he did die.
The images you see from home?
When Saul goes home and lays on the bed to die and they flash the images of like the deer and the flower and the... So maybe that's what Thorne is seeing. Maybe he did die, and he's thinking of home. And I don't know. I wonder, because now I'm stuck on that for a minute, if he's alive or dead. Because I was always just willing to go with, is he alive or dead? But now I'm like, what are the implications?
Do you think the people that they scoop up,
then absolutely. Also, the second time you watch this movie, it's even more horrible. So maybe even knowing Soylent Green as people, like we were saying earlier, could be like an extra dimension of that horror. Like, it's such a horrible thought. Like, you see what it did to the priest, right? Like, he goes to see the priest that Simonson saw and to confess to, and the guy's like literally on the verge of a mental breakdown. Like, he can barely keep it together. And same with Saul. Saul learned the truth and he went and he killed himself because he can't live in a world knowing that truth.
Yeah,
that's the reality.
Records, right? Or I say records, I mean books.
Right. Like, yeah, so when he steals, when Thorne steals all of the food, he also just takes whatever books are around because Saul is a detective too. He's like the book, quote unquote. So he's like the brains and Thorne's the brawn. And he gives him the books and they're like Soylent Oceanic Report Volume 1 and 2.
Yeah.
And he's like, whatever. He's like, take these books. And Saul's like, holy shit, real paper and everything. And he brings them to all of his other old friends and they go over it. And that's when they learn the truth that the ocean is dead. Soylent Green is people. They have to go find like tangible proof that people will believe.
What happens to the rest of those people? Those older people that.
Oh, yeah. I don't know. That's, yeah, you kind of just feel like at the end of this movie, everyone's going to get wiped out. They're just going to go through with a cleaning crew, take out all those old people, get those books back.
Is this also, this scene, I love the line, like, if you know, Soylent Green is people, wasn't it the line? I love the line, does Soylent buy your strawberries? I just want to start saying that to people, as like when people are being like smug about their possessions, I'd be like, oh, Soylent buy your strawberries. That's a great line.
So yeah, the bodyguard's apartment is very interesting. He's got his furniture, quote unquote, is like the African-American woman.
Yeah.
Which was interesting. Like, then Thorne's boss is an African-American man as the police chief. Like, the director said he didn't want to, he's like, I wanted to cast this sort of colorblind, and I almost wanted to cast it to like make a point too, you know, to say that this should be fine, that this shouldn't even be an issue. Yeah. Whatever, like, you know, black and white people should be living together.
Yeah,
you know, it doesn't matter who does what job. Yeah. And he's like, that was the one thing about the movie that I didn't feel should have been taken as, like, futuristic, you know? He's like, this is where I felt we were trying to reflect where we should be today and the signs of our times and stuff. And so it's just really interesting, that dynamic. And I love when he goes in. He steals the strawberries and stuff.
Yeah. On the spoon. It's like the strawberry jam, like on the spoon. Is there anything else you want to say about Soylent Green before we move on?
Let me just peruse my notes here, if you don't mind. You know, just quickly going back to that one scene when they're having dinner. I just really love the sort of the opposite of that. I just really feel like this is an extremely well directed movie, and they're really great actors. And so that scene wasn't in the script.
Oh.
Like, the script basically went, it cut to just them saying, I haven't eaten like that in years. And Edward G. Robinson going, like,
the montage of them, yeah.
So that scene used to end with Edward G. Robinson going, I've never eaten like that in years, she? And Charlton Heston going, I've never eaten like that in my life, you know, like ever. And so the director, like, went to the producer and was like, we're missing a scene. Like, we need a scene here where they're actually eating the food, because they come from two different worlds. Like, Edward G. Robinson is from before the blight or whatever happened, and Heston grew up after, never having enough. So I just feel like that was serendipitous, like, that idea. And that entire scene was improvised. Like, they basically just sat down with all the food and rolled, and that's why there's no dialogue. It's all expressions, and it's all over the music.
I think that just shows, like, another theme right there, like, listen to your elders.
Yeah.
You know, that's...
Or at least respect the past and, have an appreciation for what you have. And, like, he knows what they have because he lost it, but Charlton Heston doesn't even know how to appreciate it.
Yeah, that's why I loved in that clip, like, the reaction to, like, the apple. Just, like, an apple, like, the simplest things. I mean, that's what... I love those moments... like when people have those moments with food, just like this, you know, it's an apple.
Yeah.
That's it. You know, you pluck it off of a tree and it's delicious. Like, that's what, in, you know, one of the greatest food movies that we'll eventually get to, but I'm trying to keep it on its pedestal, that of the movie Chef, when they're going through the market with his son, and he's just like, look at this orange. It's beautiful. Like, eat this, you know, like, don't get the kettle corn. Eat the orange. Come on, eat the orange.
Right, and then cut
to them eating the kettle corn. But
of course.
Yeah, just like fruit, just like something as simple and beautiful that we, you know, take for granted. Just every, you know, plenty of things we take for granted. Again, the ice, like, that is, I'm so much happier in my new apartment that my fridge has an ice maker versus me, the simple, oh no, me, like, woe is me that I had to pour water into my ice trays, and the ice trays then had to lay flat and take up a bit more room in my freezer, because that versus now I just have, you know, a dispenser of ice.
Just a bit. Heaven's to mercy. What's that saying? Heaven forbid.
Heaven forbid.
That's it.
We've done a few Heston. Can I get your best Heston, Soylent Green as people?
Okay. All right. Yeah. My Heston, I learned it from Phil Hartman. Not personally, but watching him on Saturday Night Live.
Student of Hartman.
So there was this great sketch where he played Charlton Heston, and they were doing like a Turner Classic Movies, like, revisited of this movie, and they were doing like the sequels that never were, and there was like Soylent Silver and stuff, and Soylent okay. Cow Pies, and like Chris Farley would come in at the end and go, "They didn't change the recipe like they promised. It's still people." And
I need to see this.
And so Phil Hartman's Heston is kind of what my Heston, like where I got my Heston from. But let me try and let me see if I can do the titular line. Soylent Green is people.
Perfect.
All right, cool. I've been doing a lot of impressions on the recently. I did a couple the other night on a show I recorded. Oh. So
you're becoming the Cage Club go-to.
They're coming back out. Like, impressions. Yeah, they were in the dresser drawer for a while, but yeah. Something about them have been reemerging.
I love a good impression.
Was that a good impression then?
Well, you know, I think a good impression doesn't even need to necessarily sound like it, but it just needs to, mm-hmm. just need to own it.
Yeah.
If you own something, it's believable.
I made the face that time, so yeah, I think
unfortunately,
I owned it.
Maybe we'll take a video. No. No, we won't do that. But yeah,
hope it came across.
All right, moving on. This is still need to come up with a title for this sequence.
Oh, okay.
But famous food scene.
Okay.
So maybe we'll eventually come up with some kind of.
Let's see if I got anything. Famous food scene segment. Food unseen, maybe? I don't know.
Food, yeah. Fast food? No. I don't want to call it fast food.
Like, food scene.
Scene. It's like a
eat
like
this
buffet
scene.
Scene.
Oh, it's getting there. It's getting there.
It's getting there. It's getting there.
All right. All
right. here we go. I've got the.
Do you want to put him in a hat?
Yeah, there we go. We got a non-sweaty hat. I always wear a hat, but then I feel bad making my guest reach into a sweaty hat. But you have a non-sweaty.
It's
hat
at least
present.
My hat.
It's
too,
your hat. So you're reaching it. Yeah, it's your own.
All right. Here we go.
Here
I
we
like
go.
This. We're playing an actual like physical game.
Yeah.
Pull a number out of a hat.
Yeah, and it's real people. It's not, you know.
Raging Bull, Burnt Steak. All right, I think I'm going to have to rewatch this scene.
Yeah, we'll rewatch it right now.
Is it done?
No, it's not done.
Don't overcook it. Overcook it's no good. It defeats its own purpose. What are you doing? I just said don't overcook it. You're overcooking it. Bring it over.
Want your steak?
Bring it over. Bring it over. It's like a piece of charcoal. Bring it over here.
You want your steak?
Yeah, right now.
Good. There's your steak. Can't wait till it's done.
No,
here.
I can't wait.
Good. Okay? Happy?
That's all I want.
Not more. There.
You bothering me about a steak? Huh? You bothering me about a steak?
Yeah.
I agree with you. We should be with Tommy. If he's in a good mood, I'll talk to him. What the fuck do you want me to do?
But this Joey, Tommy tells me every day to talk to you, to speak to Jake, to straighten this thing out. I mean, I'm going to wind up in the middle of this thing.
You're in the middle. I'm his brother. He's got me fucking nuts.
You're his brother. If you can't talk to him, who's going to talk to him?
I'll talk to him.
Do what you can. That's all. That's all I'm asking you.
All right, I'll see you tomorrow. Let me go.
All right. Where are you going to be?
Be at the gym or the other joint. One of them.
I'll catch you by the gym.
All right. South.
Yeah.
He's like, come on some more. I want to hear.
Call those carrots.
That's right. They were carrots. Did you eat them?
Hey, you!
Come on, Jack.
I'm gonna get hold of that dog, and I'm gonna eat it for lunch. You hear what I'm saying? You hear me, Larry? Larry!
Crazy animal.
Who's an animal? Your mother's an animal, you son of a bitch.
Oh.
You're gonna find your dog dead in the hallway tomorrow, you
fuck. Jack, I can't stand a block. People could hear you.
That is crazy.
I don't mean to laugh at a scene that is about spouse abuse and animal like threatening the lives of women and animals, but that's just like a classic
I had not seen this movie in a long time. I might have to watch the rest of that movie tonight. It has been a long time since I've seen Raging Bull. That scene is powerful, dude. Like, De Niro is scary. His wife is done taking his shit. Like, yeah. She is so done with his shit. And, like, he's just out of control. He's going to eat his neighbor's dog?
Yeah, Larry. Like, I'm going to have your dog for lunch, Larry.
I hear what you mean where it's like, no, we obviously, like, we should not be laughing at spousal abuse, but there is a dark there's a dark undercurrent of something. There's just something funny about him. Like, he's just so pathetic. Well, like,
it's a black and white film, you know, this is what came out in 80.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, in a time where, but it's just like, is making it, it's drawing back to a time when you were watching black and white films where like that was,
yes,
people wouldn't blink an eye at the scene. Even in the 80s, I think people were just like, oh my God, you know? But like now, especially. But then on top of that, he's just there in his Italian-Americans, I'm sorry. But
I'm Italian-American.
Guinea tea. You know? And his, or wife beater.
Exactly. Well, I was just going to say, he's wearing a wife beater, and he is a wife beater.
And
I
he's mean, got the bandage on his nose from the previous fight.
Right.
His hair is just all freaking crazy, you know.
It's he's an animal, he's not a person.
Bring it over. Bring it over.
I got no choice. So do you think, you know, because famously De Niro went method, ate everything in sight to gain weight for this movie, what do you think? He ate like the steak and everything every time they did a take and stuff. Do you think he was eating like
I mean, just even flipping that table, I think that they needed to like kind of have a bunch prepared. I don't think that he didn't take a bite of that. That steak looked good.
I mean, we don't know because of the way it's edited and stuff, but there could have been footage of him eating and everything like that. I always wondered about that watching this movie. Is like, is, you know, because he's trying to gain weight, is he actually eating everything in sight? Yeah, that's crazy. And then Joe Pesci shows up. I mean, that's the funny thing, is like the juxtaposition between like the chaos in the apartment and the downstairs. Joe Pesci being like, my brother's fucking nuts.
Yeah.
Like, I got to go deal with this now. And then he walks and he's like trying to put the table back up and everything. Yeah. And like, what? There's no, like, he's in such denial. He's like, no problem. Everything's nice. Come on, just be nice. So weird.
I would love Joe Pesci is the best at calming down situations and then also starting situations.
Really? Yeah, right? Right. Have you ever seen Easy Money?
Yeah.
He gets in like 9 fights in that movie. Like, he's just constantly picking fights in
Movie. Well, the scene, I forget the name of the actor that he was in that clip with.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But that's you know, that's the famous, you know, the two of them team up in Goodfellas. Go get your fucking shine box.
Right, yeah.
Oh, God, this, come on, honey, let's be friends. I want a nice pan-fried steak now.
Really? Well, I just think I have to go check out Raging Bull again. Because just from that one scene, I was like, wow, this is different than I remembered. Better. I don't know. Maybe it's just time. You know what I'm saying? Like, I just don't see it as quite a straight drama anymore. Like, there's just, I mean, because he's such a ridiculous character.
Yeah.
It's hard to take him seriously all the time. And so I wonder if I'm supposed to be, like, is that Scorsese's weird, twisted sense of humor? Like, did he make a dark comedy? I don't know.
I think he just made this is definitely one of those films that, like, he witnessed stuff like this growing up in New York and as an Italian American.
It's almost autobiographical from the neighborhood perspective.
Yeah, it's like, first, like, definitely, like, Mean Streets is what, you know.
Yeah.
I think it, but this is definitely in his New York Italian American coverage of just definitely drew from, you know, I mean, so this is about a real boxer, Jake LaMotta, but I think he definitely took from his you know, just whether hopefully this wasn't his parents, but maybe he
Oh no, well, you've seen his parents on film. They're like the most gentle, loving, caring. The mom's amazing.
Goodfellas too, and it's, you know,
And his dad's in it too.
Let me make you something.
His dad's cutting the onion in prison. That's Scorsese's father.
Yeah, like, well, those will definitely be future food scenes that hopefully someone will pick out.
Well, I'll show you when we cut. I got this crazy VHS tape called Italian American. It's Martin Scorsese. I think it's before he made a motion picture. I mean, it might have been after Mean Streets, but it's basically just an interview with him and his parents in his apartment.
Oh, yeah.
And then it's got that short, The Shave is on it also.
Yeah, you told me about that.
Yeah, I think it's all on YouTube. You got to check that out. I think she talks about food a lot in that.
Maybe we'll do a special episode on that.
Because she used to be his, like, caterer to a degree. Like, she would cook up like food and bring it to the set whenever they were shooting, like around the neighborhood and stuff. She would show up with like big pots of meatballs and stuff.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
All right, we're nearing the end, but this is cool. For the now labeled segment of Gut Instincts.
Oh, okay.
Here we go. You ready?
Here we go. What's this about? It's just word association kind of thing?
No, this is just quick answer. You know, whatever your gut instinct answer is to these, I've got, I don't know, 15 questions or so.
All right.
They can be, you know, just try to keep them short, but, you know, any description you'd like to give. Favorite fast food?
Wendy's.
Ooh. Go-to beer, cocktail, liquor?
Oh, so I haven't been drinking in a while, but I just used to Amstel Light. It's fine. I like Amstel.
Amstel?
Yeah.
That was always.
Oh wait,
always,
you know what? Gin and tonics. If it's gonna be a serious night.
A lime or a cucumber in it?
Limes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Just asking.
Limes.
For
those of you who don't know, I just grabbed Kyle by the lapels and shoved him up against the wall and said limes really close to his
face.
Glad
I have lapels to grab. I dressed classy on a non-visual segment. Favorite childhood snack?
Oh, man. Maybe fruit roll-ups? Oh, no. Sour Patch Kids.
Oh.
Yeah, Sour Patch Kids. They destroyed me.
Are you a sweet or savory person?
I think I'm probably more of a sweet.
Sweet, yeah.
I got the sweet tooth, I think.
Favorite food city? International or domestic?
Favorite food city. Yeah. So, like, place I've been, aside from where I live, that has had the favorite food? I guess Osaka, Japan?
Yeah.
Yes, yeah. All
right. Any in the States that you're like, I mean, you know, obviously we live very near New York, but any in the States that you're like, ooh, wow, I like this cuisine?
I'm sorry. I can't be more interesting on that answer because okay. I haven't been a very sort of like, I'm not like you. I won't kind of try every dish once. Like, I'm not great with spicy foods at all.
Okay.
So like, I don't eat a lot of like, you know, hot barbecue sauce or whatever that's not. And then countries with very spicy foods, I tend to stay away from. So like, not a lot of like Indian food, I guess. But I don't know, where's there a really good Mexican restaurant? Because I fucking love.
And like, Suffern is right nearby. There's a couple of really good Mexican places.
So I'll go check that place out, and then the next time we talk,
okay.
I can let you know if it's on the list. But yeah, right now I can't really answer.
Favorite cuisine?
Oh. Jeez,
you are an Italian American, but isn't that?
I know. I mean, it's something. Can it be something my mom makes? Like,
yeah,
she is an amazing cook.
Yeah,
like growing up, like she cooked every. I was like, oh my
god, you
know,
like mom dinners. They're a cuisine of their own. So yes.
Okay, so she cooks what has only been referred to as chicken with white sauce.
Okay,
all right, and like I'm not. It's because like most sauce is either, you know, like red pasta sauce or brown gravy,
yeah,
right. But I don't know what's in her white sauce. So like,
maybe it's like a marsala or something like that.
It could be, yeah. So and then that with like rice and stuffing when I was a kid growing up is amazing, and I haven't had that meal in like at least a decade. So maybe I could ask her for my birthday, which is coming up next month, and cook me my favorite childhood meal.
That'd be nice. Yeah, my mom always makes barbecue spare ribs, like coleslaw, and like all of, like that stuff. Like that's my birthday. That's what I always want to have with my family for my birthday.
Maybe through this show, Kyle, you can help me explore my palate a little more over the rest of my existence.
Explore
the
rest of my life.
Like I gotta get a little too sheltered when it comes to food. I think like I've been eating the same stuff too much.
Hopefully,
so.
Some of the movies like inspire with not Soylent Green, but you know,
which you could go online and buy Soylent Green crackers off Amazon and stuff. But you know, they're not really made from people. I think it's actual soy.
They're made with, they're just green and they're soy and lentils. Let's see. Next, guilty pleasure food. Like, do you have anything, you know, something that's, I mean, you said obviously you liked sour, but it's, you know, maybe that goes in with the sour patch, but do you have, and you said you have a sweet tooth, but do you have any food that you're like, I don't know, a little.
Trying to rack my brain. I guess if I had known ahead of time.
It's okay.
I could be more
people. Yeah, people. Forthcoming. This is one of the more difficult questions that, you know, it tends to land towards the other areas of, like, obviously, you know, fast food. And
I think it might be okay. So, like, this is funny because this is something they talk about a lot on Boyfriend Material, Joey and Joe 2's mm-hmm. Ryan Gosling podcast. And I've been on that show twice now. I think it's twice. So, and like, we get into sort of serial discussions at the end of that show because it plays into the show mm-hmm. and Ryan Gosling. And I mentioned on that show how, like, nowadays I have to usually eat mostly just like boring cereal, like yeah. wheat and bran type stuff and things. And so, yeah, I'd say whenever if the munchies were to occur, I'd probably like go and down like a box of like Golden Grahams or something, you know, or like honey nut or honeycombs. Or so it would probably have to be like a very
sugary
cereal, okay. something like that.
Favorite condiment?
Have you ever been to Johnny and Hangie's? The hot dog place, Johnny and Hangie's. You haven't been to Johnny and Hangie's hot dog? Had one? So growing up, it used to be in Patterson.
Okay.
It's like right over the bridge in Patterson.
Oh, okay.
Now it's not. Now it's, what the street is? It's very close. It's in Hawthorne.
Okay.
So it's real close. We got
to
go.
Hot dog spots I've been to is, you know, Hiram's
yeah.
and then Rut's Hut.
Okay. Well, we got to go there all together. Right. I got to take you there. Maybe you can interview the dude there because their special sauce is like amazing. Ooh. I generally don't even put mustard on my hot dogs. I just usually do ketchup and I'm never really into chili or anything, but they have like this, their sauce is like chili, mustard, whatever is in there. Like, I don't care what they put.
Sauce.
Exactly. It could be people. Whatever they put on that, like, I wish that they jarred it and sold it. But they don't because it's what makes them
yeah.
unique and stuff. But I'd have to say, like, that for me is like the killer. Like, ooh. If I could somehow, like, what would I need to do to get that secret recipe? You know, like yeah. the Good Burger recipe. Did you ever see that?
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. Like, we'll cover that. Yeah.
yeah. So it's like that. Like, I equate it to like Good Burger sauce. It's
what's
like,
the name of this of the place again?
Johnny and Hangie's.
Johnny and Hangie's.
Yeah.
I
think it's hot. Should I look it up? Yeah, real quick?
Johnny and Hangie's in New Jersey, but
yeah, Northern New Jersey.
Northern New, yeah. Well,
well, not Central New Jersey.
It's not a real place. last thing you ate?
What is the last thing? I'm sorry, it's in Fairlawn.
Oh, okay.
Okay, so Johnny and Hangie's in Fairlawn. Okay, the last thing. Yeah, it's like right next to it.
Yeah.
Last thing I ate. Coffee doesn't count, right?
Well, you had coffee.
I had a cup of coffee yeah. today. It's already 4, and all I've had is a cup of coffee.
That explains a lot.
let me see.
It was almost a Joe Pesci. Both of us like
almost
no,
a Ray Liotta.
Liotta actually,
yeah.
closer.
Uh huh. You got a wicked laugh repertoire. You got really.
That's like you got the Ray Liotta. You have to like.
You got the Peter Griffin, which is on point. Which is pretty close to a Fred Flintstone, which is just a slowed down.
Bonnie!
wait, last thing I ate. What did I eat last night?
You're down the shore, right? DTS.
Well, I came home and I had. Oh, no, I mentioned it at the beginning of the podcast. So last night I went to the diner.
Oh, yeah.
And I ordered the Taylor ham, egg, and cheese sandwich with fries, okay. and I brought it home and I ate it here.
There you go.
Yeah.
So on a roll or a bagel?
On the roll.
On the roll.
Yeah.
The good round, the Kaiser roll.
And that was pretty late last night, like around 7 or something. So.
Right. It's your. You just know whether you're in jail, you committed a crime, or you're on your deathbed, but you've got the stomach for it, your last meal.
A person. No. Human flesh. you think anyone's ever
the
asked?
The prosecutors.
Yeah. I want the judge's hand on a platter. No, do you think anyone's ever asked for that? Like,
Well, don't say no. It's not like it's there.
I didn't know. They were served it. I just wondered if anyone's asked for it, like, even as a joke.
Dahmer? I don't know.
I would probably, you know what? Like, this was another meal I liked as a kid because I got it oh so rarely, and since it reminds me of the beach, which I just got back from, and we used to go to this place near Point Pleasant, and one time I ordered this because my parents were like, get whatever you want, you know?
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, this looks interesting. What's this? Surf and turf. And my parents kind of just like looked at me. It was one of those like most childhood moments kind of thing, where I was like, well, you said anything, and like, I didn't know reading prices, you know what I'm saying? Like, when you're seven or whatever, or eight, and like, they let me have it.
So we're talking
and it
like
came...
a filet and a lobster tail?
Yeah, man. Yeah, I think that's what I'd go for. Wow. Like, I would love to have it. I haven't had that in a long time. Yeah, with the butter. Yeah, can you get two of those? Two
you can get, for as much as you, yeah.
meal or
endless.
Something? Like, it would definitely be something like that. Yeah. Like, a little more of like class to it. I wouldn't order like, you know, Wendy's, even though I love Wendy's. Like, I could live without tasting Wendy's one more time. I would like to go out with like a real meal, something like that.
That's
nice. So,
eat in or eat out? That's always, I guess, Kyle. That's a word where everyone, no, our dirty minds prevail.
I'm not
usually.
DJ Khalid or whoever, so.
do you like a home-cooked meal, you like, or you prefer to
I think as much as I love a home-cooked meal, there's just something about going out and being served and
when the professionals
ordering it and waiting for letting it, putting it in someone else's hands like that. And going to
conversation,
patronizing an establishment. Yeah. And I like the way people want, when people are inviting into your place, you know, it's like, oh, you want me to come and like eat in your house and like use your bathroom and stuff. Like, cool. Like, I'm up for that, you know?
Spirit food.
My spirit food?
Yeah, what is, you think, like, what food just, like, you know,
what
if you're going to be
am
turned
I?
Into, yeah.
Oh my God, Kyle. I'm
right?
a, I think
this
I'm
is
a,
a, this is
okay,
a soul
I got,
searching
I think,
podcast.
I think of a grilled cheese sandwich.
Yeah?
Like, I genuinely kind of think inside me.
Grilled cheese on, like, American cheese on
You know
one.
What it is? It's actually kind of two things. So, like.
This is about self-discovery.
Yeah, mind. This is something I'm not a big chef or cook. I don't cook a lot of my own food, but I make my own grilled cheese sandwiches, and like, this is something I learned. I think I learned this from Chef.
Yeah.
Keep it moving. Yeah. As like I stand over that grilled cheese sandwich until it, like, I never let my eyes off stop touching it with the utensils. Like, it's constantly moving. I'm constantly flipping it. Like, I really put my tender loving care, my heart and soul into my grilled cheese sandwiches.
I love
sandwiches.
A good TLC grilled cheese.
One thing I am not, though.
With American cheese.
Yeah, American cheese.
Yellow American, white American?
I'm a yellow American.
I'm
guy.
A yellow
yeah,
American.
I'm
I
a,
think they taste different.
I do too.
And I don't think just because of the dye. I don't think so.
I think it might be the dye. No. Yeah. But there's one thing I'm not, and that's a grilled cheese deluxe. Have you ever had a grilled cheese deluxe? Like, you could put like tomato and bacon on a grilled cheese. I just think it becomes too complex. It's I'm
even
not,
with bacon and being a lot of people are, you know, the bacon is bacon
I know.
Makes everything better. You like a grill? You like a?
I just think maybe, but I'm sort of, I'm not that complex. I guess like deep so down, like,
butter,
keep
bread,
it simple.
Cheese.
Yeah, right. Uh huh.
Keep it moving
in one pan.
Yeah,
you know. Right. Nice. Yeah. So I'm a grilled cheese.
There we go. All right. Well, that's the. I've got one more question, but that's the end of like the gut instincts.
Okay.
But what? And, you know, obviously, like, I'm asking this to chefs, so obviously they have much more of, you know, advice to get in. But Brian had a pretty good answer to this, too. But what is a great lesson, could be the greatest, but a great lesson you've learned in food? And I think we've talked about some stuff, so I don't want to put words in your mouth, but, you know, there I think there is, everyone's got, you know.
Like, what has food taught me? Or like,
yeah, what is, yeah, just like in the realm of, you know, so,
yeah.
I, like, for instance, I said, you know, try everything once, you know, that's,
right.
You know, that's a.
I think along the way, and it's funny, especially I think more so as an adult, I think it's really kept my patience in check. You know, like, I think, like, you know, the idea of waiting to have to prepare food,
so
like, or like
out
going
just,
out
yeah,
to get
yeah.
food, like the idea that, like, you know, sure, you could open like a bag of chips and snack, or you could open this and that or whatever, and like, you could nuke something in the microwave for 2 minutes, but I just think, like, if you put the time into it, it's so much better. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, time and patience and all that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And if, you know, waiting for it, and like, then when it finally arrives, it's like, it's almost like in Pulp Fiction when she's like, oh, don't you love it when you come back from the bathroom and your food's waiting for you? It's like, yeah, I love it when, like, you know, you're like, where's the food? Where's the food? Yeah. And then suddenly it comes and you're like, oh, yes, like, the moment.
Good. That's a, you know, that's very, that's transcendent. You know, good things are worth the wait, right?
Exactly. Yeah, there you go. That's the lesson.
That's the lesson.
Good things are worth waiting
food,
for.
Food, it's, I mean, food really is, if anything is going to, I'm sorry, people, like, I'm not a preacher. I'm not, well, but, you, but
you're
I'm
a food preacher.
Yeah,
look,
but,
preacher, I mean, it might be a dirty word right now, but it doesn't
priest,
need to be.
Preach.
There you go. Right. Yeah. Exactly. So
but,
yeah, preach about food, my man.
And I will repeat it time and time again. If there's one thing that's going to get like everyone together and like make people appreciate and understand one another, it's food. It's why you say, let's break bread.
Right. Yeah, the breaking
Let's
of bread.
Break even bread this time with some nice
last
gooey
supper.
Yellow American in it. Right?
Exactly, right. Let's break grilled cheese sandwiches together.
Keep it moving, and good things are worth the wait, right?
Exactly. Yeah, that's it. That's cool. I like that.
I like it,
too. And it's true. I believe that.
I say nothing but the truth.
Thank you, food. Food is honest.
Well, that's the end of this episode. What did you think? Thank you for coming on. What did you,
dude, this was a lot of fun. Yeah, right? Thank you for having me.
Thank you.
I wasn't, you know, I was very excited for this show. This is a great idea for a podcast. I love the, I just love the idea, like, how you can sort of take it beyond the films and how you can actually, you know, interview chefs and all this kind of, like, there's life beyond just talking about movies, mm-hmm. which is like a lot of our shows are, which is totally fine, which is a lot of fun and everything. But like, I really, from day one, I was really excited about your new venture, and I think it's really cool. I didn't know this was going to be the first episode I was on, but I'm very excited because I love this movie. I think it's a great film. I think everyone should see it, and I'm really just glad that you wanted to talk about this movie too, and that you were able to fit it into your show.
No, thank you so much for coming on and like bringing, that was a lot. You added so much to Soylent Green, I think, into what as we're, it's perfect, the credits are now
rolling. And I think you had to cut me off too. I mean, I could probably go another episode.
that just goes to prove how great of a movie Soylent Green is. What do you got to plug?
Your own
podcast. You got so many other podcasts too.
Yeah, so I want to, just because it only, I'm not sure when this comes out, but probably by the time this comes out, my own show is only once a month because of the work that goes into it, i.e. all the books I read for my show.
Yes.
So I'm trying to get that to come out a bit quicker, but I'd like to plug my show first, Third Time's a Charm, where I have guests come on and we talk about the third film in a movie franchise. And, you know, it's a lot of fun. The guests seem to like the book club part of it, so I'm going to keep that up as much as possible. But I think, you know, in order to get a few more episodes out a bit quicker, I might have to do some movies without books involved.
Okay.
So that might be starting
up. You find
up.
The novelizations, right? Of the...
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So for whatever reason, for season one, I was like, I've got novelizations for all these movies. I'm going to read them and compare them. That might not sustain the entire series. I mean, it's a lot of work.
Oh,
and I want to do more movies than I'm getting to right now.
We'll eventually, I know at least one, but there might be another one someday, but I know for sure Trip to Spain is where this Foodie Films
crossover.
Crossover.
Yeah.
Let's
do that soon.
Lewandowski. The other co-founder of Cage Club, he's all about crossovers.
No, yeah. Love crossovers. Yeah. I mean, ever since the Flintstones met the Jetsons, you know, Abbott and Costello met Frankenstein and the Mummy. Like, yeah, it's a great, I mean, it's just great synergy. It's a lot of fun. And then, so with Joey right now, we started up Cinemakers again. So we did all the films of Steven Soderbergh. We did an episode with Nick from Real Bad Podcast about Fede Alvarez, which was really cool. We did his two films, Don't Breathe and Evil Dead remake. And now with Chris Mattiello from the Now and Again podcast, he, Joey, and myself are doing all the films of Christopher Nolan.
Cool. And
so,
those you don't have like guests on, right?
Right. Those is just the three of us.
Do I get to? Because that's like you and Joey, and then so for Soderbergh was with Tobin.
Yeah.
Who his podcast, The Contenders, right? He's a
That's right, with his sister.
Yeah,
The Contenders. So
again, this is the Cinemakers, is like you and Joey, and then each next director is like
a new co-host kind of thing. Yeah, well, we have, what we say is we have the same guest for every episode.
Uh-huh.
So for Christopher Nolan, it's going to be Chris on every episode. And those are awesome right now. Like, I feel like those episodes are like some of the best episodes, like, I feel personally that like we've done like on the network. Like because all of us really like Nolan, and I think we know a lot about the movies, and some of those conversations have been really cool.
Do you guys choose the director and then find the person to be the co-host, or have people come to you?
Not sure how we've been doing it. I think we've been trying to figure out who we're gonna do, and then we'll find the co-host. I can't remember. I don't know. But
I'd like to
we got to get
suggestions
you
down the road.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, we got to get you on because I feel like Joey and I might be done doing single actors for a while, just because good as Charlize Theron's been, like, it's kind of been.
It gets where I mean, as a co-host quality of P.S. I Love Hoffman, again, my favorite actor of all time, and he wasn't in. I mean, what like I don't think any of his films were. Like garbage per se, but just the an actor like the same films like he was in similar films. It's just with this even this, it is like obviously a lot of like food films, but that's why I'm happy to bring in Soylent Green, because it's such a different than like just a movie about a chef or whatever.
Right.
But that's what's fun about obviously then Cinemakers and finding a podcast like that.
It's been really fun, and there's been some Pacino impressions, some Michael Caine impressions. Some Bane impressions already, and we're episodes away from Dark Knight Rises. I'm already out of the darkness.
You think darkness is all?
I
was born to podcast. Pacino. why am I Charlie? You gotta try the bread, Charlie. It's the best bread.
So my Pacino starts up here and then goes down there.
Yeah, but it becomes a crawfish captain.
So that's the least of what you can expect over there this season on Cinemakers.
Cinemakers, and then and again, third time's a charm. Do we have a separate Instagram for that, or separate Twitter, or do you have your own Twitter?
I have a Facebook page, third time's a charm page.
Okay.
I'm trying to get it more active. I'm posting stuff. I posted something about Alien 3, about they're going to make a comic out of a screenplay they didn't use. Yeah. We talked about that Alien 3 episode. Still cracks me up. I think about that. I know it's kind of sad that I think about my own content and it cracks me up and stuff, but that episode.
It would be sad if it didn't.
I feel like those. I guess it would. I feel like all those shows so far have had moments that have really made me crack up, that have been a lot of fun to do, and everyone's been real supportive on that show. So awesome. They've been real sports and sitting through that book club, and you could hear at the beginning they're but then at the end they're yay.
Cage. I mean, you are a co-founder of Cage Club. That's got what's the Cage Club? They're on it. That's on Instagram too, right?
Yes.
Cage Club Podcast Network? Is that or Cage Club Network, or what's the, do we know?
We're on Instagram, that's
we're
for
on
sure.
Yeah, if you search Cage Club, you're going to find
CageClub.me, Cage Club Pod on Twitter, and I believe that's the same on Instagram. I'll check my Instagram right now, and you can, Cage Club Pod,
cool.
On Instagram, right. And let me just see if is there any other little things. We are still doing Nick Cage. All right, we are 7 months into the year and he has already put out 4 movies.
Jesus.
All right,
how does that work with Cinemakers?
So we just we're just gonna pick up. So that's funny you mentioned that, because after the Fede Alvarez episode, Soderbergh came out with Unsane. So then we went back to Soderbergh for an episode.
Okay.
But what we're going to do, if he makes any more movies, we're going to finish up Nolan, and then if Soderbergh made a movie, we'll do that. You know what I'm saying? So
is
we'll
Nolan
always go back.
Is Nolan working on anything right now?
Pardon?
Is Nolan working on anything?
Not that I'm aware of. I'm not sure. I mean, I'm sure he's working on something, but he's always kind of been a bit in the dark.
Yeah, Dunkirk was
until
his last one, right?
Yeah.
And it was last summer, and that was nominated for Best Picture and everything.
But the thing is, so Cage Club, the original podcast feed, is still going strong. Like Joey and I do the Revisiteds, so those keep coming out just to keep that feed alive. And we do all Cage's new movies. So far we've done 4 new movies for Nick Cage this year, and he's got another one coming out next month. He's going to be playing Superman in Teen Titans Go, animated movie. So he's finally going to be Superman.
Yeah, and it was announced semi-recently about Spider-Man.
Yeah, he's going to play a version, an alternate universe version of Spider-Man from the 40s called Spider-Man Noir.
That's awesome.
Which I've read a couple of those Spider-Verse comics, and they're pretty awesome. Like, back when I was collecting, that was towards the end of when I was collecting. I remember right after the Spider-Verse storyline ended, they rebooted the Marvel Universe, and I was like, I'm out of here.
Yeah. I'm just going to stick to the movies.
Clean slate, yeah. I'm done, I'm out.
So, like,
you're like Saul. You're just
I just wash my hands. Yeah. But, and you know, he's got the very highly anticipated movie Mandy coming out in theaters this year, so that's going to be huge. So it's still a very big year for Cage. He's not going anywhere anytime soon. And then at the time of this recording today on Friday the 13th, Keanu's first new movie in about a year has come out. So we're and he's got two other films scheduled for release this year. So Keanu Club's going to keep going. Charlize is still going. So, yeah, and then whenever any of them have a new movie coming out, we'll be covering that too, as long as whatever else we've been up to. Joey and his six other podcasts, like half the network, but they're all good. So that's great. I love the Fast and Furious podcast probably the most because I love that franchise. So I've been actually watching the movies. So, like, you know, they're doing they're going to watch them forever.
Yeah.
So I'm, like, watching them with them forever from the comfort of my own home until they have me on the show at some point. So then when I'm finally on the show, I can be like, guys, I've been watching them as much as you guys have been watching them. It's awesome. It's so awesome. It's so much fun.
Well, and you guys can find all of these, again, on cageclub.me and then iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher. Just, you know, search Cage Club and then you'll find all the other great podcasts underneath it. Obviously, Foodie Films as well. And, Mike, we have... I don't think I've ever called you Mike. That felt really weird. Manzi.
That is weird. Yeah.
I say Michael when I'm like, like a joke series, but I never say Mike. I say Manzi.
I never noticed that.
Yeah.
Oh.
You got a good last name that...
Yeah.
I hate people calling me by my last name. It was like jerks growing up that called me by my last name, so that's what I said.
I feel like, I mean, this is more of a Brian thing for high school show, but like I feel like in high school, everyone went by their last name.
Well, it was like a very, I mean, I think
in a lot of ways. At least my friends and I always like,
But
all right, Manzi's cool.
So, Well, Manzi, I liked it having one so much on P.S. I Love Hoffman. Oh. So we do have a finishing line. And I wanted this, since it's cooking, and cooking is just, you know, love and family. You were saying one of your favorite dishes, you know, or cuisine was, your mom cooking for you. So this is something that my grandmother always says when she cooks a big meal. She always says, there's more to cut. So that, and I feel like there's more to cut. So I feel like that's just like a nice theme to life in general. There's more out there. So if you could say it right now for the foodie fans,
there's more to cut.
Beautiful.
Thank you.
Che bella.
Bon appetit.
Bon appetit.
Yummy, yummy, yummy. I got love in my tummy, and I feel like I'm loving you. Love you, such a sweet thing. Good enough to eat thing, and it's just what I'm gonna do. Ooh, love to hold ya. Ooh, love to kiss ya. Ooh, love, I love it so. Ooh, love is sweet.